Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn. Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you go to our website, check out other resources, contact me if there's anything I can do for you. I love to hear from people and be a resource in any way that I can. Well, this week, I'm just going to take a little bit of time and talk about conversion therapy and a Supreme Court case that's been getting a lot of attention that was just heard this last week. And so I did a podcast episode on conversion therapy. When I first started the podcast about three and a half years ago, I think it was one of our first episodes, and a lot has changed since then. So I want to give a little bit of history, and then we will get into some of the specifics with this law that is being challenged at the Supreme Court. It's a law in Colorado, and a Christian counselor has challenged it. It bans so-called conversion therapy. And so I want to give a little bit of history there before we dig into some specifics. So these conversion therapy bans have been kind of a fight within state legislatures for over a decade now. Initially, when this started, it was just about sexuality, because that's before transgenderism was really a big thing like it is now. And so that's why the conversations change a lot, even in the last couple of years, on what these conversion therapy laws actually ban. And so I have always fought against these conversion therapy bans. People are really confused about what conversion therapy is. At its core, what is told by the world who is trying to pass these bans, by the LGBTQ community and activists, is that conversion therapy bans try to change someone's sexuality. And so they try to change a gay person to be straight again. And that is the goal. And the narrative that they use in talking about these is that these procedures, these therapies, have been completely debunked. They're harmful. They lead to suicide. But there's a lot of problems with their arguments. For conversion therapy in regards to sexuality issues, which is obviously something I'm much more engaged in than the actual gender aspect that we're seeing a lot right now, they're very, very broad in how they define conversion therapy. And so back when they're trying to pass these initial conversion therapy law, conversion therapy bans, they would use really harsh examples of what conversion therapy was, like people had shock therapy and some type of genital mutilation and some really horrible things like exorcisms to get rid of a demon that was causing same-sex attraction. And they'd use those examples, which I don't doubt that those happened at some point, and it's horrible. I don't think that any of those methods were ever widely used. I don't even know of anyone who has experienced those things, but they would use those examples to try to paint conversion therapy as this barbaric practice to try to make a gay person straight. And I testified at state legislatures, especially in Nebraska, against these bans. And, the activists who push for them are very actually anti-science. Right. And some of these bans have not held up in courts. Some of them have. There's, I think, 23 states right now that have conversion therapy bans. In the United States, most of them are based on just for kids. So banning conversion therapy for kids. And so right now, the conversation has changed so much to be around gender that now these laws are banning so-called conversion therapy for transgender individuals or people with gender dysphoria. And so it's really, really bizarre. It's such an upside down world we live in. And so how they're defining conversion therapy for someone with gender dysphoria or any type of discomfort with their body is anything that helps them not be transgender. So anything that helps them be at peace with the gender they're born with or go back to living as the gender they're born with, that is considered conversion therapy. And it's so bizarre because they still allow, and in this case in Colorado, actually dictate that therapists, counselors support actual transitioning genders. Right. And so someone comes to you as a therapist and they have gender confusion, the only option in the state of Colorado and a whole bunch of other states right now is to affirm them in their gender dysphoria, their confusion, and help them transition. You cannot allow them, you're not allowed to help them work through and talk to them and be at peace about the gender that they were born with. And that's what counseling did for, you know, the last 100 years since the start of any modern day type of talk therapy or counseling. And so these bans really are very dishonest about what conversion therapy is. They try to use these examples that don't really happen. They really cherry pick data to try to claim that they're harmful. And I have no doubt that there's some people who have had bad results. And there's some people where whatever therapy they were using did not work. Just like so many people who have had some type of treatment for alcoholism, right? And they weren't successful. We don't say that, just embrace your alcoholism because the treatment just made you frustrated and depressed, right? It's like, no, you keep fighting and you find different treatments that work. And so these conversion therapy bans are so broad that they cover any type of suggestion that someone could change their sexuality to be heterosexual, or that they could go back to living as the gender they were born with. And that's part of the problem, is that they're so broad that they apply to just about everything, like pastoral care. There's countries that have banned, you know, conversion therapy, like Germany and the UK and a whole bunch of countries. And I know people who have been arrested for merely sharing their testimony. And so that's where it's going. And the current laws they claim that they're trying to stop some harmful practices, but they have a agenda that is actually stopping or trying to stop the spread of the gospel and trying to stop actual methods that actually help people be at peace about who they are. So that's a little bit of the history and how we got here. Now the conversation again is a little bit different now that we bring transgenderism into the picture. I usually, I would never tell someone to go out and get conversion therapy because there's a lot of therapeutic methods and some of them are good, some of them are bad. I want people to get biblical counseling, but biblical counseling would fall into the category of conversion therapy by merely suggesting that someone could live a different life. And so I would be very specific on the type of help I tell someone to get. And I am when people come to me for help. But I completely don't believe that the bans on conversion therapy are just or right or honest about what it is and how it actually does help people in many, many situations. So secondly, I want to share this. The current activists who are passing these bans claim that it's they're for kids because kids aren't old enough to consent to a type of therapy like this. Like they're not old enough to try to, change their sexuality. And this is a desperation to silence Christians and stop real science from actually getting kids the help that they need. And it's so ironic, and this is what I've said about these conversion therapy bans all along. It's so ironic that they can still help kids convert into one direction, right? They can still consent to gender-affirming care. And right now in Colorado, counselors are required to provide that to help a child transition genders if they feel uncomfortable with their body. So they can go in that direction, but they can't go in the other direction. That's part of why these laws have been challenged in the past, is because they were like bans on one-way speech and that you could take a child in one direction, but not in the other direction. So even though they try to claim that these are only for kids too, they obviously don't believe in kids having to consent to something when you know, they also give them gender affirming care, but they find ways to apply them to adults, and adults are always the next step. And so, you know, many of these laws have provisions in them that they not only apply to kids, but they apply to vulnerable adults, like an adult with gender dysphoria. They are considered a vulnerable adult. Anyone who's part of a LGBTQ community, so all gay lesbians, which is like everyone who needs therapy, right? So they put these provisions in there to stop all forms of what they consider conversion therapy, even pastoral care, biblical counseling for kids and adults. But they claim that they're just trying to help the kids until they're able to consent. And all the other things that they're doing, like gender-affirming care, shows that they don't actually believe in consent or that a child needs to be old enough to understand what they're doing. So their goal is to have as many LGBTQ kids as possible. Like, that is the goal of those activists, the LGBTQ agenda, many on the left politically, and they are using these bans to help achieve that goal. And so lastly, again, part of the problem is that it's a one-way ban. And so counselors and therapists are still able to, and are actually required to help kids be more gay, to be more transgender, to change genders, to transition socially, medically, provide all of that gender affirming care. And yet they, you know, can't help them go the other direction. And that's one of the big arguments against these bans, is that their own arguments that kids need to be able to consent isn't being applied in the other direction, with kids receiving gender-affirming care, all kinds of LGBTQ resources that really influence them in the direction of homosexuality or transgenderism. Previously, before the whole world went mad with this, most counselors would say 90% of kids would move on from gender dysphoria if given the right support, right? And so kids who are questioning their gender, who feel uncomfortable with their bodies, which, like, what kid doesn't feel uncomfortable with their bodies during puberty? It's hard, right? All these changes are happening. It's awkward. And most of them just need some help and support, and it becomes a very temporary phase. But now our current culture and social media and therapeutic methods are pushing kids that if you are at all uncomfortable with your body, then you're transgender and you need to change genders. And that is absolutely ludicrous and abusive and causing irreversible damage to our kids. It's really, really ironic that some of the initial bans on conversion therapy, they're using examples of, like, mutilation as methods of conversion therapy that need to be banned, or examples of why all of it should be banned. And yet they're the ones right now who are literally cutting off kids' genitals. Like, that's what they are doing with gender-affirming care. And then with, you know, puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, it's rendering kids infertile. And so they are doing damage to kids' genitals, sometimes literally having surgery to take them off. And I know of those people. I know of kids who have had top surgery, bottom surgery as teenagers when they're like 16 years old to remove their breasts and their genitals. And that is literally mutilation. And that is still allowed and supported, and yet helping a child come to peace with the body that God gave them is not allowed. And so that's one of the main arguments against these bans, is that they're just one way, and they prohibit one type of help but can't go in the other direction, which is what we've always done, is help kids accept the body that God gave them. And most of the time that works, and they move past these struggles and move on to be healthy, normal adults. So how did it go at the Supreme Court this week? Well, I think as I watched some of the actual hearing, it was about 90 minutes long. I think that the conservative justices thankfully seemed very skeptical of the law in Colorado. And one of the things they seem skeptical of is it being a medical consensus that gender-affirming care is necessary and conversion therapy is harmful. And I wasn't surprised by that because some of those justices like Justice Alito really latched onto that this summer with some other rulings in which they upheld Kentucky's ban on gender-affirming care. What was being argued there by people trying to undo that ban was that the medical community has a consensus that gender-affirming care is correct. And now they have a consensus that, you know, conversion therapy is harmful. But the justices didn't buy that argument this summer about gender-affirming care. And I don't think that they bought it this time with the conversion therapy ban. And so, you know, I think it was Justice Alito brought up some really horrible things that we've done in the past, like lobotomies that at the time had a consensus and yet were extremely horrible and cruel things to do to people. And so they really show that they don't trust the medical community, which is a good thing, obviously. And the, you know, counseling psychological community, they brought up in the arguments that, you know, the major medical associations, like, you know, the American Pediatric Association, whatever it is, all those associations all believe that conversion therapy is wrong and gender-affirming care is right. Those associations are driven by ideology, not by science. And there are a massive amount of medical providers who are living in silence and fear. They want to speak up about the harmful effects of gender-affirming care. I really hope that they start speaking up more and have the courage and the boldness to fight back. They're the ones who are in the best place to do that, being in the medical community. But they know that there are consequences of them doing so, and they might lose their job. And I think that's a small price to pay for protecting kids. But thankfully, I think that the Supreme Court is going to make the right decision on this, like they made the right decision on, the ban on gender-affirming care in Kentucky. And so I think that they're going to make the right decision. I think there's at least five of them that see the truth that this is ideology, not science. The main argument by Kaylee Childs here is the freedom of speech, that not allowing her to have these conversations with people who are seeking her help is a violation of her free speech rights. And, I think a lot of people would agree with that, assuming that she wins that argument and the Supreme Court sides with her. I think that it is a two-way street that has a downside. And the downside is that therapists who want to transition kids can say the same thing, that it's their First Amendment right to have conversations with kids that help them achieve the kids' goals. And so that is the downside, is that that freedom of speech applies both directions. It's still better than the status quo in places like Colorado, where there's freedom of speech in one direction, but not both. But it is unfortunate that with this argument, it will apply both directions and people can still do counseling that helps transition kids' genders. Now, some of the gender-affirming care bans that have been passed, do not cover this type of counseling and banning it. It covers conduct and not speech. And so conduct are the, you know, actual medical aspects of surgeries, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. Those have been banned in many states. But the freedom of speech, First Amendment, as it is being argued in this case, is not about conduct. It is about speech and language. And if it's held up by the First Amendment in this case, then it does apply both ways. And I think there'll still be a lot of counseling that helps kids transition genders, even though we are thankful that some states are banning the medical procedures and the hormones and such that are helping kids transition, because that is absolutely abusive. And we see people all the time detransitioning because they realize that they were lied to and their transitions aren't working. Here, I did bring in a little clip of one of the lawyers who was at the Supreme Court last week talking about it. He works for Alliance Defending Freedom. It's a great organization. I really love the work that they do. I've worked with them in the past in preparing to testify at different places, and I really love the work that they do. So here's one of the lawyers who actually fought and made some oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court this week.
We were able to make arguments before the court challenging Colorado's counseling censorship law. This law is blatantly viewpoint discriminatory. It allows counselors to help a child pursue the path of gender transition. But if a child instead wants to consider getting comfortable with their body and realigning their identity with their sex, this law says they can't talk to a licensed counselor in the state of Colorado. That's unfortunate because it's harming kids every day. There are kids struggling with issues of gender dysphoria, and this law tells them that if they're seeking help in one direction, that licensed mental health professionals and counselors are not available to them. As we made our arguments to the court today, the court seemed very receptive to the points we were making. The court acknowledged that Colorado is trying to censor private conversations between licensed professionals and their clients. Specifically, that would be in violation of what this court said just a handful of years ago in the NIFLA versus Becerra case, where the court recognized the harms of censoring private conversations between counselors, doctors, and their clients. The court indicated, gave many, many indications that it was bothered by the law. It seemed to me that the court views this, at least many members of the court views this, as a viewpoint-based law. And under the First Amendment, Colorado is not allowed to censor viewpoints based on which side of the aisle they fall on.
All right. So I think that he seemed very hopeful that this is going to go their direction. And we hope that, we pray for that. I know when I was a child, I would have loved some pastoral care that understood me and helped me. I think I was in college when I came to Christ, and I started to go to some counseling that helped me understand my same-sex attraction and apply the gospel to it. And I'm thankful that it was available to me. And that counseling is what modern-day activists would consider to be conversion therapy, even though I wouldn't call it that. It's just pastoral counseling and talk therapy, normal counseling to work through my issues, but they are trying to classify that as conversion therapy to try to make it sound like it is harmful. All right, I want to close with just the big picture here. What do we do as Christians? How do we move forward? We pray that the right policies are passed. We should be involved in the political process to elect the right people and pass policies that protect kids. I've always believed that. I think that we've seen some good policy. There's some pushback coming back in our culture against gender-affirming care. And so that's a great thing. It's something to celebrate. We keep fighting for that. At the same time, I always feel like every time I talk about anything political, I have to also give the bigger picture that the gospel can't be stopped. And so we have hope no matter what. Recently, you know, in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination, there's been so much talk about Christianity and politics, and I want people to be more bold about the right policies. That's great. I heard a well-respected apologist recently who was very involved in the Charlie Kirk situation, and I really love this guy. He's great, but I saw on one of his videos, he said that we need to be deeply involved in politics as Christians because, you know, they are trying to stop us from sharing our faith, and they're trying to pass laws to stop us from, you know, making disciples, from sharing faith. And I don't support that statement, because no law can stop me from sharing my faith, and no law can stop you from sharing your faith. And so the gospel can't be stopped. And I see that in countries where Christianity is illegal, where the church is thriving under persecution. It reminds me, it might be that we're sharing the gospel with our cellmate, like the Apostle Paul did, but no one can stop us from sharing the gospel. And so I just, gosh, I cringe at some of what's happening in our culture right now. I'm thankful for much of it, but I think we need to be careful not to put our hope in politics. You know, the answer for your neighbor's transgenderism is the gospel. So go share the gospel with them. Last week, we had a great conversation on here, great episode about sharing the gospel and starting gospel conversations, engaging with LGBTQ individuals. So go listen to that. It was with my friend Nate. It's a great resource. But don't put your hope in the government fixing things. Instead, go and make disciples, share the hope of Jesus, share the hope that you have. That is what God has called us to do. And people are open to the truth. And so pray for them, love them, share gospel hope. All right. I think that's a great way of ending it. Thank you so much. If I can answer any questions, please reach out. Again, go to calibrateministries.com for more resources. Thank you for listening. We are, you know, funded by donors. And so if you're able to support Calibrate Ministries, we really, really appreciate that. All right. Thank you.